Case 55 in the Blue Cliff Record. Da Wu's Condolence Call. Secure and intimate with the whole of reality, one obtains realization right there. In contact with the flow, able to turn things around, one assumes responsibility directly. As for cutting off confusion in the light of a stone-struck spark or a flash of lightning, or towering up like a mile-high wall where one occupies the tiger's head and takes the tiger's tail, this I will leave aside for the moment. Is there a way to help people by letting out a continuous path or not? To test, I cite this. Look. Da Wu and Qian Yuan went to a house to make a condolence call. Yuan hit the coffin and said, "Alive or dead?" Wu said, "I won't say alive and I won't say dead." Yuan said, "Why won't you say?" Wu said, "I won't say." Halfway back as they were returning, Yuan said, "Tell me right away, teacher. If you don't tell me, I'll hit you." Wu said, "You may hit me, but I won't say." Yuan then hit him. Later, Da Wu passed on. Yuan went to Shi Shuang and brought up the foregoing story. Shuang said, "I won't say alive and I won't say dead." Yuan said, "Why won't you say?" Shuang said, "I won't say, I won't say." At these words, Yuan had an insight. One day, Yuan took a hoe into the teaching hall and crossed back and forth from east to west and west to east. Shuang said, "What are you doing?" Yuan said, "I'm looking for relics of our late master." Shuang said, "Vast waves spread far and wide, foaming billows flood the skies. What relics of our late master are you looking for?" Zhuedo added the comment saying, "Heavens, heavens." Yuan said, "This is just where I should apply effort." Fu Tai Yuan said, "The late master's relics are still present." And the verse, "Rabbits and horses have horns, oxen and rams have no horns. Nary a hair, nary a wisp, like mountains, like peaks. The golden relics still exist right now. With white foaming waves flooding the skies, where can they be put? There's no place to put them. Even the one who returned to the West with one shoe has lost them." So these wonderful stories we encounter. These, of course, are the stories of our life. And the challenge is how to make it, how to step into it. How to step into the moment. And in a koan like this, for me at least, it's so clear that there are so many entry points. As I read this over and walk with it and sit with it, wondering about it, noticing the places that catch me. This practice is, of course, not different from the practice of Shikantaza on the cushion, of meeting what is arising. And in this koan, starting with the secure and intimate with the whole of reality, one obtains realization right there. This secure and intimate place is our life. We can look everywhere else for it, and of course we won't find it. But after we have looked high and low for the teaching, after we have worn ourselves out, after our knees are sore and our shoulders ache, at some point, hopefully, as James says, our heart breaks. And we realize that we are totally inadequate to this task. That try as we might, look as we might, figure as we might, it does not yield. All of us, of course, make up our secret plans for our Zen career. How many retreats I'll do and what kind of experience I'll then have. I remember when I first started Zen, doing kimming, and sometimes it would seem like we would go on forever, but I realized I had this secret hope that maybe the next lap around the Zendo that I would get it. You know, maybe just one more time and then I will find it, or it will happen to me. But the teaching is that it has already happened to you. And there is no place to find this. There is no place it can be put. So we at some point come back here. But the other thing that was so vivid for me thinking about this morning is this cry of alive or dead, this quandary. That one of us yesterday expressed so vividly. I can't say what I mean. I can almost taste it. I can almost find my way. And this, something we don't talk too much about, but this great doubt. Say the three pillars of Zen are determination, faith, and doubt. The aspect of practice that is receptive and is already here, just stop trying so hard. We might say the shamatha, the calm abiding. And so important in our practice to enter this aspect of practice, that no effort is required. And the other aspect is this great doubt, great intention, this vipassana, we might say, this moving toward insight. And one of the gifts of the koan tradition is the impossibility of doing it, and how it throws us back on ourselves. And without this intention to wake up, without this yearning. We cannot find out for ourselves that through most of this story, our friend Chen Yuan is calling from his heart, from his sincere desire. And we can imagine that traveling with his master, he has already sat many years, already has some sense of this, and yet his mind is not at ease. He has read the sutras, studied koans, done everything he was supposed to do. And yet still there is this yearning, this knocking on the coffin. What is it? What is it? What is this life? What is this death? This is the great question, the great unknowing. And at try as we might, and all of us, of course, bring ourself to the cushion, and all of us in this room have had some degree of success in living a life as an adult, and we have our tricks that work for us, and ourselves, our competence, or our intuition, or our analytic ability. And so we bring this and we try this, trot out myself, and hope that if I am, if I try hard enough. And this trying is absolutely essential. And all of us, of course, are in this place. All of us have committed, have signed on for these days, these timeless days, these brief days. And so how do we in the moment keep this inquiry alive? This inquiry into that which cannot be known. If you think you know what it is, I would ask you to put that down. This path of awakening is actually essentially not a binary path. It's not an either or, because we're told again and again it's already happened. Our nature is already awakened, already functioning. And perhaps we catch glimpses of this. For many of us, easier to see in other people. Maybe we can appreciate the person sitting next to us and see the shining heart, see this human being already complete. One of the things I love about our ordination ceremonies is that everyone we ordain, I have a clear sense that, well, this is who I should be like. So when Ray ordained, I was sure I should be like Ray. And then Bob and Mike, and I said, oh, okay, here, yeah, Mike is really, if I could be like Mike. And last night, of course, I know for sure that I should be Diane, as she, the luminous heart shines. But of course, what we see is the aliveness of life. It is our own birthright. But we cannot stand outside ourself and see ourself. We say again and again, you cannot judge your practice. Jeweled Mir Samadhi says, do not judge by any standards. Always truly being ourself is a wild risk. If we enter the flow, if we give up standing outside of it and dance with this moment that has never happened before, then there is no right or wrong. Zen Master Sung San constantly admonished his students not to check. Only don't check. And of course, quite a thing to do, because we all want to know, how am I doing? How was I? How am I? How will I be? And this urge to locate ourself, this desire of the little self to pin it down, to have it be a thing that we can hold on to. This is a fierce urge, and as much as we say we long for freedom, we long for spaciousness and ease, oftentimes when it appears, we go running the other direction. We go running for cover. So here in the Zendo, in the safety of being alone together, where we keep custody of our eyes, we keep our eyes down, partly as a gift to each other, so that we don't have to put ourselves on, so that we don't have to be somebody, we don't have to check other people. And we can begin to live into this possibility of not checking ourselves. This life where we align with what is already here, whatever is called for in the moment, meeting the this great electric uncertainty, place of confusion. We say at the end of the wall, it's at the end of the road, it's like an iron wall. And unless we look everywhere, unless we throw ourselves into this, we do not get to the point of being truly lost. As long as you have a shred of hope, you cannot enter. The cost of entry into this moment is everything you know. We must give up all of our gifts, all of our wisdom. And perhaps even more challenging, we must even give up all of our faults, all of the things that we know are wrong with us. And so alive or dead, we call out to the universe. We call out to the Bodhisattva of compassion. And the teaching is that Kuan Yin responds immediately. There is no gap between the call and response. And in these interchanges between teachers and students, it can be very helpful to entertain the possibility that the teacher's not just being a wise-ass jerk. Which it often seems like to me. I get kind of angry. Like, well, why didn't you just tell me, quit doing this Zen stuff? But what if, I won't say, what if this is the direct answer? What if this teacher is opening his heart, fully presenting the treasure? In Chinese, they don't use pronouns. And so I assume that the as this is written, it was just two characters, one that means no, most likely mu, and one that means saying or speaking. So the teacher says, no speaking. As Bodhidharma said, no knowing. So there is this question, there is no answering the question. And the student and you and I are thrown back again and again to exactly the place we would most like not to be. This is where the vow comes in, thrown back again and again. This is the great mercy of the universe. This, the mercy of no escape. This person that you are, you will not be someone else. And the great mercy of the universe is there is never was a need to be anyone else. For some reason, this seems to be one of the most difficult things for human beings to recognize. We are so tied into our sense of this couldn't be it. So tied into having to improve, having to be different. This sense that the Buddha called dukkha. Something not quite right or something terribly wrong. So as we sit here, each one of us thrown back again and again, this throwing back, this trying different things, these moments of clarity and then confusion, this is the great way itself. Another sesshin will not help you. this is what you have been looking for. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably. If people want to move seats from the behind the fireplace, please do. So, Raleigh and then Cindy, and then back there, yeah. Raleigh.
This idea of clinging to my faults, that struck me that hold on to my faults because then it's not okay for me to be me. So, I'm going to give up my faults, and if anybody wants to take them.
Yeah, and I think it's important to see as we sit the attachment. Because, of course, if we could give it up like that, we would. So it's actually what's required is an awareness and seeing, because it's so paradoxical. I just think, oh my gosh, if I could just get rid of. But until we see into our attachment to that and see how that works, we can't. It's like the ball of goo that you try to throw, and you open your hand, and it just doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. There's a cartoon that some of you know that I found years ago in a humor newspaper that we subscribe to that shows a man holding a big stone, and he's sinking to the bottom of the ocean, and he's saying, "My stone, my stone. Who would I be without my stone?" And then the next one is him looking up and saying, "On the other hand."
Cindy?
That really powerful image of occupying the tiger's head and taking its tail really speaks to me on this. And as you were talking, the definition of insanity came to mind, doing the same thing again and again and each time expecting a different result. But I keep doing the same thing again and again, and it gets more comfortable to sit with the "not okay."
Mm.
Can you speak a little bit to the occupying the tiger's head and taking its tail?
You want me to? Can I see it? So as for cutting off confusion and the light of a stone-struck spark or a flash of lightning, or towering up like a mile-high wall where one occupies the tiger's head and takes the tiger's tail, this I leave aside for the moment. I think it's important to see where Yuan Wu is heading with this. You know, there is this, I think it points to what this little topic that is coming up about our clinging to something. We're clinging to an idea, we're clinging to a sense of the self, and we think that we could cut off confusion. You know, we talked about this yesterday. We can really, come to Sesshin, and on the third round of the walking, we'll have great and perfect enlightenment, and everything will be swept away. And occupying the tiger's head, taking the tiger's tail, this is strong urging to wipe it all away, which is important. You know, there is the energy force of Manjushri with the sword cutting off delusion. That's definitely a part of Zen. But I love that Guan Wu says, "This I leave aside for the moment," because he's showing another way of teaching. He's showing this really loving no speaking, no buying in to. So I come to a teacher with my, I'm such a failure, and, this is the story of my life, and I never get it right, and there's a way of buying into that, of saying, yep, well, let's work on this. Let's get your self-esteem up. And this is the other way. This is the way of going, so how about right now? And then it transcends both the habits of avoiding and the habits of fixing. It just goes right to the point. So this I leave aside for a while. I think that's a really important teaching. There'll be a time when you're just going to have to say, I give up, okay, I'm just going to sit here until my head bursts. Not to do that with some gaining idea. It's like there's something else going on. So that might not have anything to do with what caught you in this line. Interesting. Great. Of course. Duh. Thank you.
Yeah. And then, is it Mo? Can't see in the very back.
There's somebody else, right?
Near the Buddha. Is it Buddha back there?
There is. Yes.
Because we were talking, the koan turned for me a little bit, and I just wanted to share that with everybody. What was the young attendant's name? Wangwu?
Dawu.
Dawu. I imagined, as we were talking about it, I imagined him, instead of hitting the coffin, actually hitting his teacher.
It's Yuan Xuan.
Dead or alive.
Oh, sorry, no, it's the other guy.
Yuan Xuan.
What's his name? We always forget his name.
Yeah, the other guy, the attendant.
Oh, Dawu was the teacher.
Yeah, you are.
No, he's the
instead of the attendant hitting the coffin, I saw the attendant actually hitting the teacher himself and saying dead or alive, and the teacher giving the same response.
Yeah.
That does happen later in the koan. He does hit him. Qian Yuan, we figured out. We did a little.
Yeah. But he doesn't hit him and say dead or alive. He's hitting him because he wants an answer about the guy.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. Yes.
Yeah. Great, thank you.
It's a little dangerous to talk about this koan because, you know, later we'll have Doksan.
But you're armed.
That's right, we've got.
Oh, right, great.
Yeah, over the hand to the right there.
Yeah. I just wanted to share that these old stories are more contemporary than you might think. I told Melissa this in Dokusan yesterday. So I was a beginning Zen student, and I was working on Mu. And my teacher says, what is Mu? And I say, I don't know. And he says, well, what is Mu? And I say, I don't know. And we go back and forth on this, I don't know, 8 times. I'd never even heard the Blue Cliff record. And I'm getting pretty pissed off. And then I say, if you ask me that again, I'm going to punch you on the nose. And he said, you can punch me on the nose if you want, but you still have to answer the question. I thought that was a kind of... we capitulated this, and I was completely, you know.
Yeah, around the corner I see a hand.
It's Jeremy.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Here in the con again today, I was struck by the tenderness of Dao Wu's response, I won't say. And I don't have another word for it, just the tenderness there. And, you know, that idea of alive or dead, and it's not a question about a body, and it's not a question about a box. You know, this moment, our lives right now, alive or dead. And an idea that's been very resonant for me the last few months along those lines has been reflecting on sort of this perpetual cycle of aspiration, failure, pout about it for a while, dust yourself off, try again. Perhaps some of you are familiar with this cycle. And realizing that so often my aspirations aren't actually designed for me. I will actually go about planning my next day or next hour for somebody else, some, you know, super hero version of myself who can do things in all of those badass, super slick, never stuck ways that I just can't seem to pull off most of the time, except, you know, when it happens. Which apparently is entirely of its own accord and has nothing to do with me. Or more importantly, my impression of what just happened. But there's the question, alive or dead, whose life are you living? You know, making these plans for some better version of myself that I just can't consistently be, or, okay, put that down for a moment. What kind of plans do I make for this me? How does this me, with all of the faults and all of the fears and all the good, bad, everything, all of it together, how does this person go about their day? How does this person sit, do a sesshin, make a cup of coffee, whatever?
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. I think this place of realizing we're planning for the wrong person, or realizing we have some idea that's actually not who we are. I think this only comes after we go around that washing machine cycle many, many times, right? So this, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing, but we're insane. I mean, if we try not to be insane, that's even worse.
Hear, hear.
So how to enter into that cycle, to be intimate with it, and it's the last thing in the world we want to be intimate with. But until we go around and again and again and the 10 millionth time, we begin to see something we hadn't seen before. We cannot change. We cannot do this work based on willpower. But if we pay attention, if we do not abandon ourselves, if we look where we are, then we only look where we are, Jeremy, as you said, when we've tried every place else. You know, if there's one more place where it might be, better go look there. It might be there. So Bob and then Laura.
I was struck by the fact that we can't do this without each other. That here's this very senior student, right? I mean, he's yeah. really senior. He's not a novice, and he's so desperate and even then, after the second teacher said, I won't say, he has an insight. It's probably not that he's never had an insight before. We lose it. That no matter how far along we are on the path,
yeah.
sometimes we just lose it.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, no matter how much I know not to send an email when I'm angry, I just lose it. And we need each other. We need not just we need all of us as teachers
yeah.
to
yeah.
keep reminding each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just this.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Bob. Well said.
Something that touched me yesterday, and it's still reverberating with me, is the alternative translation that Melissa mentioned of "I can't say, I can't say," and it came up for me again today as we were reading, and I was thinking it's touched me on in a couple of different ways. That the first way, when I heard I can't, actually the words came up for me, I can't say, I can't say. And then when you said that, I thought, for me it speaks to the mystery. I can't explain it. You know, I hear the teacher saying, I'd tell you if I could, but I can't explain it to you. It's bigger than explanation. You know, that kind of bigger than the words kind of thing. And I can't say, I can't say. For me, it also touched me in the not being able to find the words. and that's it.
It makes me think of Dosho Port's teacher, Katagiri Roshi's book title, You Have to Say Something. And that somewhat, it's impossible to speak about this. And as teachers and senior students, some of us have to. And I feel that the words of the liturgy and the words of Dogen and the koans help me to find ways to say these things. When I initially encounter any of them, I don't know what they mean. But after a while, they reappear. They come as gifts from my little brain. And there's, oh, right, of course. It's not just that we need each other. Like Bob was saying, this each other expands at least 2,600 years. That there are people who've encountered the same stuff. Like Nick was saying, you know, this sounds like an old story, but it just happened to him 20 years ago or so. It's current. It's the same, that same yearning, that same incapacity to speak. And other people have struggled to find words, and we can sit on their shoulders and be inspired. I love that. I just love that about this tradition. Like it nourishes me because it's impossible.
Derek and 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could say a little bit about after the guy took a hoe in Zendo and his teacher said something. He's like, I'm looking for relics, and his teacher said something. I was wondering if you could say a little bit about what the teacher said.
Oh, that's a beautiful.
So the teacher said, what are you doing? Yuan said, I'm looking for relics of our late master. Vast waves spread far and wide, foaming billows flood the skies. What relic of our late master are you looking for? So what, Derek, something caught you or catches you?
I just wanted to know what you guys had to say.
Are you going to say?
I won't say.
Too easy, right? It's too easy. But I'm inspired by this line too. That I'm thinking of Dao Wu is dead. So it's an interesting story because they go to the funeral, you know, they go to the condolence call. I won't say, I'll hit you. You know, and then later he dies. Dao Wu dies. Not from the hit, it's much later. And then there is this thing about, you know, so where did Dao Wu go? This is another koan. Where's our ancient teacher? What happened? Where's the Buddha? Where's Mahakashapa? Where's Dogen? Where did they go? Where are my parents? Where are the people who aren't currently living on the planet? What's going on? I'm searching everywhere for them. It's a classic little thing that's going on. Whatever his name we can't keep forgetting. Our hero. What is it?
Yuan.
Yuan.
Yes, which is Chen Yuan.
Chen Yuan. And this other teacher, Shi Shuang, who was also a student of Dao Wu. So, you know, their older brother, younger brother. And wow, you know, what are you looking for? Can't you see it everywhere? Can't you see how nobody died, really? This is, you know, this weird, not empty, not form here. There's some resonance. We're in the realm of the bliss body of the Buddha, the Sambhogakaya, fully alive right here. The aliveness that Jeremy was pointing to that's possible for us is not conventional aliveness. It's something bigger, and it fills the universe. And what is the life? Vast waves spread far and wide. Foaming billows flood the skies. No, don't make a fetish of this or get attached to it, but whoa. Sometimes it's like that. And not because we made the effort to make it so. It's just the way it is. And every once in a while we get to... It's revealed to us. again, you know, this is what we were talking about yesterday. If we try to forge ahead, you know, I'm going to find that little beautiful leaf and it's going to awaken me. That's not it. But every once in a while, just a little thing, or really a big thing, or something in between. That's how I see it.
I still won't say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Mike. And
well, I love the next line, too, where the student says, well, I'm just basically doing my thing.
It's yeah. Like,
I don't remember exactly how he says it, but yeah. He's like, you know, well, I'm just kind of cleaning up around. I think it's funny. It comes after this big billowing talk. And it's
yeah, like, this is just what I should... where I should apply effort.
Yeah,
right.
Just
here.
I'm just going
just
yeah, yeah. Just walking
funny,
around.
Funny response to that big, yeah. Poetic, beautiful yeah. Language.
Yeah.
Really showing his who he is. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which actually is perfect for what I was going to bring up. This case for me has been about, death. I mean, it's at the heart of it. There's two deaths in the case, and it's about partings, separations. And how real they are. Mm-hmm. You know, the spiritual bypass would be to say, you know, oh, I shouldn't feel anything, or billowing clouds and, you know, whatnot. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, so the reality of the pain and the sense of separateness. And then I've also been very much reliving the priest vows that Diane took, and feeling about no separation, how what beautiful medicine that is for our separateness, which is still true.
Right.
And how is that possible? Brain
yeah.
Can't understand, but it is. It's just true.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what... Anyway, I can say for myself, that's what brings me here, is like this wound of separateness and pain and death and loss. And at the same time, this incredible presence of how interwoven we are, and the love at the heart of it all. And mm-hmm. It's like the wound and the cure in the same place, in the same spot.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
This coming for me is really overwhelming because. I'm feeling that it addresses the three great points of Buddhism. Emptiness, non-duality, and impermanence. And are all colors like this?
I think every point of the universe is like this.
Yeah.
So these teachings of the three marks of existence is the insight that this is the way things are when we look deeply into the real form of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So every koan can have a different slant to it, but I think the possibility and the invitation in every koan is to meet, this... the impermanence, to meet the suffering, to meet the this absolute world right here, right? So it is vast and can't... these koans are endlessly revealing as we bring ourselves for this very reason. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. Right, yeah. Wonderful and scary.
Wonderful and scary.
So, two more, Karen and then Todd.
So, I definitely have been living parts of this koan like in real time. I was up in lying on the bed, and I'm just like, you know, lying there in the bed, and the breath, and I hear the hum, and I'm like, well, I know I have 7 minutes in the bed, and the breath, and the hum, and it's like really fantastic. And then I'm down here sitting, and it's really, you know, I'm just sitting, and I hear that thing going off, and I'm like, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to actually show up and put myself together here.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, and then I had an exchange with Melissa upstairs, which is sort of part two of the koan, And it's really, this is such an amazing practice. It's like so rich, like right in real time.
Like, yeah, real time, yeah, right here.
Yeah.
how wonderful. Great, thanks, Karen. Yeah, and Todd.
First, I just want to say that I love your expression of custody of the eyes as a gift for others. I haven't heard it expressed that way before, although we do that. Quite moving. The rest of what I was going to say has gotten all mixed up. but, you know, I often think about how young children seem to meet the moment so directly. And it had me thinking about, in some ways, how your original thought of maybe one more round of Kim Kim, you were right. because if it's about kind of this full effort and inquiry into an impossible question, then that is what is required. You know, one more round of Kim Kim. We do have to look for the leap. In order to not find it again and again and again. I'm sorry. That's where it starts to get mixed up. But I just—it's kind of a beautiful futility that maybe when it wears on us enough, then all that's left is the doubt and the determination and the faith, because we tried everything else.
Right, right. Sometimes we say plowing furrows in the sea. pounding stakes in the empty sky. Yeah.
And you know, we do. I've had this thought a couple of times through this Dharma dialogue. We do emphasize, you know, don't try so hard, you know, just to just receive. But the fact is that every single person in this room has decided to come to Sashin for the weekend. So you've really made a huge effort. You had, right? Everyone had to work out these 3 days off and find your way here and plan and pack, and then we ask you to sit still, not move, keep custody of the eyes, stay with your practice. That's a big effort. So beyond that, if you don't think you're making an effort. We're all making a big effort just to be here and support each other. And I love that you brought that back, Todd, what David said. We are not doing this for ourselves.
All right. Thank you.